Thanks for tuning into Mysteries of the Mind, a podcast revealing the way our unconscious minds shape our lives. And now, here's your host, Dr. Michael Bader.
The Golden Rule urges us to do unto others as you would have them do unto you. While generally a good guide for our moral behavior, it's also, with a slight twist, the psychological dynamic underlying child abuse. The twist, the dark version of the Golden Rule, would go like this: do unto others as was once done unto you. As most of us know, child abusers were usually themselves abused as children. The problem's huge, and the human cost inestimable. Over 40 million kids in this country suffer abuse every year, affecting all educational and socioeconomic levels, ethnicities, cultures, and religion. More than 1,500 kids die each year as a result of child abuse. But why? And more specifically, why is abuse so often found in the backgrounds of those who hurt children or who hurt others who are weaker than them? What exactly is going on? Well, first we have to better define abuse, I think. Abuse can come in many forms. It can be sexual. It can include overt physical violence. But more often it's emotional. So, for example, severe neglect qualifies as emotional abuse. But all forms of abuse rest on the same psychological foundation as the overt physical violence typically associated with the term child abuse. So again, what is this foundation? The key to understanding this tragic pattern is found in what psychologists call identification with the aggressor. Simply put, when a child is frightened and hurt by an adult, that child tends to grow up feeling and acting similar to that adult. That's what we mean, of course, by identification. Now, on its face, this may seem a bit puzzling. Why would a child choose, even unconsciously, to become like someone who's abusive? The reason the child does so is in order to feel safer. Here's the heart of the matter. In the child's mind, he or she feels safer being the doer than the done to, the powerful rather than the powerless, and the one who inflicts pain rather than is the victim of pain. The child would rather, in other words, be a chip off a violent parent's block than be hit in the head with that block. See, there's nothing more distressing, nothing more painful and intolerable than helplessness. None of us can tolerate helplessness for very long. See, helplessness is one of the most toxic of human emotions. Our psyches, the human psyche, in fact, will attempt to do anything to escape being in a helpless position, even if it means turning around and putting someone else in that position. When the abused child grows up to abuse others, in the moment of violence or in that moment of emotional rejection, there's a shift from helpless and frightened object to frightening subject. And that shift from object to subject, from passive to active, feels urgent and is almost automatic. Sometimes the harm done to the weaker person is rationalized or attempts are made to justify it, but the true motive is unconscious and its origins are ancient. Sometimes the trigger for the abusive adult is something about the child that makes him or her feel helpless. Say, for example, that person's child is obstinate, oppositional, disobedient, or just inconsolably cranky. The parent's will is being thwarted, momentarily making that parent feel powerless. But you see, for the parent who grew up experiencing helplessness in toxic forms, these old feelings are now re-triggered. It's almost like on an unconscious level, the adult is re-experiencing something that was traumatic from his or her own childhood. And the adult's solution, even if momentary, to this feeling of powerlessness is to become a powerful aggressor. The adult's childhood trauma is resurfacing, and the switch from passive to active, from being the victim to being a victimizer, is an automatic defense. The adult, in other words, uses this identification with the aggressor to escape dangerous feelings of helplessness and weakness. See, parents have an awesome power and authority over children, an authority that's physical and emotional. This power, inherent in a family, too often offers adults a safe opportunity to repeat the painful patterns of their own childhoods. But this time, you see, they're the ones inflicting the pain rather than the ones on the receiving end. We all know that ideally the exercise of this authority must be tempered by love, patience, and empathy. But too often it serves to protect the adult from feelings of helplessness inherited from his or her own childhood. Now, there's one other dimension of identifying with the aggressor that makes people resort to this defense growing up. When we identify with someone, we feel closer to that person. Identification with a parent is a way of being connected to that parent. Sharing a character trait enables one to share a precious emotional space with a parent who might otherwise be quite problematic and difficult to relate to. So even if the parent is abusive or scary, becoming a scary abuser serves the unconscious purpose of fostering a feeling of belonging, of being in the same boat, of being sort of one with the parent. We can, I think, see this pattern of identifying with the aggressor played out not just on a personal level, but on a social level. We see it, for example, in fraternity hazing and other hazing rituals where older classmates or veterans abuse newcomers in the same way they were abused. And on an even bigger level, social groups often engage in this type of repetition. For example, poor whites, themselves victimized by ruling elites, turn the tables and victimize people of color. These social phenomena all have identification with the aggressor at their psychological heart. You know, there's a great scene from Saturday Night Fever that in one 5-second scene shows this dynamic at work. The John Travolta character sits down with his family for dinner. His younger sister speaks out of turn. In an instant, people start slapping each other in the head, almost like they're passing it around the family. Now, obviously, this is an almost playful version of identifying with the aggressor. The reality is usually much more serious and tragic. The golden rule is a terrific moral guideline. We just have to stop passing on our pain to others in order to follow it.
Thanks for listening to Mysteries of the Mind podcast. To learn more about how your unconscious mind really works, please tune in next time. And be sure to visit Dr. Bader's website at michaelbader.com.